Welcome back to episode 292. Joe, how are you doing this evening?
I'm a little down in the dumps, Tim. I noticed that Russian mainstream media had announced this afternoon that Bakhmut had fallen to their forces. And evidently there are around 10,000 Ukrainians that are trying to, according to these reports, escape. The areas they have to get through are all under Russian artillery control. And so it's just going to be an absolute hellacious, murderous process trying to, you know, do an escape under these conditions. And I just, you know, the poor Ukrainians, you know, it's basically Holodomor 2.0. Zelensky's military strategy is simply to depopulate his civilians. And I am also disappointed the mainstream media hasn't really picked up that fact. They get confused by the, you know, by the dialectic, and they see, you know, many of them see Russia as reasonable, but I think only a few people are really commenting on the fact that the whole purpose of the war is just to depopulate Ukraine. And to that point, last week, Zelensky went to Poland, met and talked with the Polish prime minister about ending Ukrainians' border with Poland. I don't know if you caught that, but basically creating just one country. Now, of course, this would just completely evaporate Ukraine. Because just think of the condition that the population will be in following the war. They'll be, crushed, and there's no economy, and the Polish oligarchs will simply come in and take everything. So that you're really watching an actual destruction of a 38 million, you know, population European country.
So I guess, is that Galicia or something? That,
yeah.
Near the Polish part, the term is Galicia. Yeah. That's always been in dispute. Obviously, Poland.
Oh, sure.
Just prior to the outbreak of the Second World War, had seized large chunks of Czechoslovakia, which had fallen apart. You know, this was the Germans came in and declared themselves the protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia, I think it was the official, you know, when they got Sudetenland, and then it kind of crumbled. And then the Germans came in, took that, you know, took control of those territories. And then the Poles came and took a big chunk of it. I think sort of was it the Hungarians? I think I got my geography right. Or is it Romania? I forget that area of the world. Geography is kind of vague. But yeah, that the Galicia has always been, you know, sort of, it's gone back and forth. And of course, the ethnic makeup of the people, before World War II, a lot of ethnic Germans in those areas. And then, of course, with World War II, that changed the map. And of course, Poland got back its nominal independence and became a satellite of the Soviet Union, part of the Warsaw Pact. And now Poland, once again, supposedly, at least nominally independent, has been sort of been utilized by NATO, sort of exploiting their Russophobia to get involved in this conflict and perhaps once again be a spark for another war. You know,
well, I just hope that what is going to happen to the Ukraine, what will be exposed, the revelation of the actual extinction of the of a European country, will be a lesson for these other, NATO weaklings like Poland and, Finland. They have to be aware that, you know, the controllers of NATO could easily see that they could use their country in the same way.
Yeah, and, yeah. I think Finland has voted to accept NATO membership, which is huge, because for the longest time, Finland, you know, Finlandization was an idea where you keep it neutral. And of course, yeah. Finland itself was borders the Russian proper. But just before they had to change their government, I believe, right? Then they just toss out that bimbo they had as prime minister.
The party girl. Yeah.
The party girl.
Yeah. You know, she was pro-NATO, and they replaced her with a homely a stay-at-home guy who was also pro-NATO. So yeah. they're in, and I just hope that they have more sense, you know, in terms of their of like maintaining control, political control over their country than the Ukraine did. I mean, obviously, Zelensky wasn't there in an honest, democratically elected situation. I mean, the last president they had that was democratically elected was Yanukovych, who was kicked out after the Maidan false flag.
Yeah, 2014.
And then there's been NATO puppets. And now it's just this absolutely tragic situation. You know, they're talking about a spring offensive for the Ukraine to try to, you know, flex their muscles.
Isn't that what this document that was leaked or something?
Yeah. The leaked documents indicate, you know, that they're building up their forces. This is just, it will end catastrophically. Because
I was reading reports saying, look, they're trying to muster an offensive, or at least create the illusion they're capable of doing that. Perhaps a leak was a way to sort of boost morale, but without having to actually engage in an offensive. And I made the point is what they should do is just lie about the offensive and just claim all types of false victories, because the people in the West aren't going to know the difference.
Of course not. They should just have a movie.
Yeah, just movie, you know, just a...
I mean, Zelensky became president of Ukraine because he was in a TV show.
Yeah.
So why can't they just have the war fought basically in a TV show and then tell the West we won?
They said like Zelensky walk around with a cigar drinking a lot of brandy like Churchill or something.
Yeah, that's right. but, you know, I just like modern warfare is a very tricky business. I was looking at videos of these thermobaric bombs and missiles that Russia have. Have you seen any of those things in action? I mean, they have this two-step ignition process where it explodes and a vapor, a mist, goes over a large area. Then it catches on fire.
Mm-hmm. It's like a fuel air bomb or something. Yeah,
it's like a fuel air bomb. Yeah. And these things will create a temperature of over 3,000 degrees. And I mean, anything that it does, you can be in a trench, a bunker, it doesn't matter. It just sucks all the air out and just replaces it with lava, you know, in your lungs. Mm-hmm. So it's really just a weapon of mass destruction. And Russia has really good, space to ground GPS controlled, artillery systems. And the idea of 40 or 50,000 Ukrainians kind of march to the Crimea coast or something. I mean, there wouldn't be a single one left. It would literally be, you know, like the Child's Crusades in the Middle Ages. They would all be dead long before they ever got to the goal. So anyway, I'm sorry to have digressed into this, but it just was sort of weighing on my heart. I do try to pay attention to the, you know, this situation. And I'm just hoping that there'll be a moment in which there'll be a political reaction that'll be strong from, particularly from the Europeans, as it's revealed what is really the actual fate of the Ukrainians, where they'll just find a way to stop it. You know, I mean, we just have to try to find a way to...
Well, they're in the way of taking out Russia, right? That's the problem, is you have this near conservative plan to take out or destabilize Russia, which is ridiculous. Of course, it's megalomaniacal. It's you know, the huge Russian state is Eurasian landmass spanned, was it 15 time zones? They're they've tried to create a situation of regime change, and they just don't want to deal with Russia as a geopolitical, you know, cultural reality, which it is.
We're going to talk later on about the decline of
what's the crisis creating the West.
We'll get into how Russia actually dealt with the sanctions as an indication of to use an expression, Tim, the brave new world onsetting now, because the dollar and NATO are really there'll be much revelation, I think, coming up in terms of the weakness of both of those very shortly.
Yeah, paper tiger that it is. And, you know, Russia called their bluff, and now we're seeing, but anyway, well, as I think you said to Kissinger, it said Russia is never strong as it appears, never as weak as it appears. You know, so it's one of those lessons, like, they always seem to ignore, like, don't get in a land war in Asia, don't invade Russia, all these things that everyone thinks they can ignore. So yeah. Anyway, well, this past week, Donald Trump, of all weeks, Holy Week, right? Donald Trump was indicted.
Yeah.
And was brought before the Grand Inquisition in New York. He surrendered up, went and flew up to New York for some reason or another. Of course, this indictment is phony. It's an attack on the American tradition of rule of law, I think, and one of many attacks. Trump isn't the first victim of a weaponized judicial system. He's just one of the more prominent victims of this stuff. The January 6th defendants know all too well how the legal system can be weaponized based on false, accusations and false narratives. We have this sort of this political local machine prosecutor who is, of course, a Democrat. He's not really known for being tough on crime. Makes exceptions for a lot of things, a lot of criminals. We see what's happened to crime up in New York City under his jurisdiction in Manhattan. But it is this sort of this indictment of Trump after the past 6 years of sort of this anti-Trump hysteria. We've had Alvin Bragg's office, of course, has been leaking, which is a felony. It's not a misdemeanor. This is actual felon leaking to reporters about the details of the indictment. Of course, very little substance to the indictment we talked about last week. Basically, it's a misdemeanor. Even Alvin Bragg admitted it in his press conference, where he said it was these misdemeanors in pursuit of a greater crime, which he never defined or identified. So there's no greater crime. The statute of limitations have long since expired. There's also the fact that Trump was accused of breaking a federal law, but it's a state prosecutor indicted. Case doesn't make any sense.
I tried to read it. I just thought, first of all, just even the grammar, it's just pathetic. But I have a little data point that's kind of amusing. So basically what he's being charged with, if you break it down to what really they're accusing him of, is a failure to disclose the individual that hush up money was paid to.
Because that's what NDA is all about, isn't it?
Right. Because it isn't actually the fact you're able to do that, but for some reason it's the idea that he was deceiving people by not telling them that he was actually arranging for the hush up money to be paid. Now, I did a little digging here to see, well, this is pretty heinous crime. I wonder how many people have been actually convicted of this. Well, Trump will be the very first one. No one has ever been convicted of the heinous crime of failing to disclose the name of the person you paid the hush up money to. So, I mean, it is preposterous, and it's illustrative of really just the breakdown, not just of civility, political civility, but just of the whole idea of nationhood. You know what I mean? I mean, you really, at a certain point, you just can't even be in the same country or certainly in any kind of a sovereign area, like a county or something, where you have this kind of Soros DA control.
Yeah, you would. CNN had a poll, whether this is accurate or not, or whether it's, is in line with the pulse of the nation, if you will. The U.S., the majority of Americans are aware that Bragg's prosecution is political, but approve of it, meaning they just don't like Trump. It's like, yeah. Okay, so they're perfectly happy with the legal system being weaponized against a political figure that, with whom they may not like. They don't see the larger principle here. Is a breakdown of sort of civic of a civic creed or faith in the system.
Because you can't really, if you think about it, you just can't be in a nation with people who are using the legal system to destroy you. I mean, it's just there has to be some zone of sort of mutual respect that is in play all the time. Otherwise, it's just a, what we are becoming is just a little fiefdoms where, you know, they're red states and they'll be like red cities and there'll be enclaves in blue states. But that's just how we're going to live. And this is accelerating, in my opinion. You know, there's a wonderful website. You know, you're talking about, you know, the DA in New York not getting around to real crime. There's a website that I find just, I mean, I hate to say it, and this, you know, kind of shows, I suppose, a weakness of character on my part, but I am amazed and amused at the website. It's called Hey Jackass, and it actually gives you all the statistics of Chicago's violent crimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the one that, I mean, I could just go on for hours with the stuff that it's showing, but the thing that I was so amazed at was the carjackings. The percent of carjackings which lead to an arrest is 2%, only 2%. So it's basically been decriminalized.
Yeah.
You know, and it was never high, but like, you know, because Chicago, but it was, you know, up to like, I don't know, 20%, maybe 15%. But then in the last, you know, since Lori Lightfoot, it's just collapsed. And now this year, 2023, you know, and now they have the decarceration, to use an expression, decarceration law, so that you can't put people in prison for many different things. They don't have to go through the process of making bail. So, you know, obviously all the crimes will go up, and carjacking is down to just, they're leading, you know, there's been 231 carjackings so far, and there's been 3 arrests. So there it is. And my point here is that when you look at Trump and his failure to disclose that he gave the bimbo $100,000 to keep her mouth shut, man, I think this is really a stretch as far as, you know, like the idea that we're heading toward or in the process of becoming a more civilized nation.
Yeah, I think the case somehow like covering this up was going to affect the election, as if the American people didn't know that Trump was, you know, a womanizer going into the election. I mean, Americans have long since caring about that.
Well, it's like, wait a second. Who in America didn't know that? That story, Daniel. I mean, it was front page news. That's why the whole thing is so preposterous.
Yeah.
I
mean, what's really just, I mean, obviously, we talk about hypocrisy here. We've seen, you know, this case. So just highlights the fact that the government has been exposed as sort of a corrupt, authoritarian sham, you know, run by people who have no problem interfering in elections, altering outcomes that they don't like. They don't mind fomenting mass unrest or covering up that unrest or creating fake news or censoring information and something that, you know, that would make us someone in the Soviet Union, you know, some operative Soviet Union blush for, you know, with the state or, you know, with Pravda or something. Trump has, you know, for some reason, he has all, you know, all the right enemies, if you will. I mean, basically, everyone hates him, are the most disgusting people around. But they operate pretty much on the principle that pretty much anything is justified in trying to go after him, no matter how illegal or unethical. And because they're saving our democracy, as they say, they violate all the rules. But we saw, you know, with Trump, FBI spying on Trump during his campaign, FBI working against Trump during his presidency, so he was never in control of his own FBI. You have the mass unrest that was fomented by the state itself, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, that's FBI involved in that. You had, the White House itself was under siege, and that was cheered and encouraged by the press, mostly peaceful protest. Of course, you had the raid on his Mar-a-Lago home. And of course, this what just occurred in Manhattan with him being indicted, and so again, it's something. Again, it's a breach of the public trust, perhaps a trust that was never deserved. Perhaps, but the real criminals, of course, are the ones going after him. The system has been obviously weaponized to go after political opposition. Of course, Trump is simply the most prominent of the victims, or whether it's theater or not, whether Trump ever spent a minute behind bars, I doubt. But of course, I mentioned the January 6th protesters. Right now, there's the Proud Boys trial, which is a sham trial, and this could be setting Trump up for additional charge regarding the elections. They're still trying to go after Trump for questioning the election results of 2020, concocting this case out of Georgia, where they're trying to suggest a phone call made to the Secretary of State is somehow election interference, all the while covering up all the crimes and funny games that were played to install Biden in the White House, of course, that itself is election interference, to doubt the election. Not to mention the whole thing with Russia, the Russia hoax, which consumed the nation's, at least the those inside the Beltway, consumed their attention for most of his administration. You had Hillary Clinton, you have Trump's hush money, but you have Hillary Clinton, who her campaign paid for this Steele dossier, this fake intelligence that was fed to the FBI, that was used to justify the warrant, which is illegal. You had that character, Client Smith, the FBI agent, who admitted to falsifying evidence to obtain the warrant. He didn't even lose his law license, nor has he spent the day behind, even though that was a felony. So, it's outrageous, but it's this complete weaponization of the legal system, which then does spell sort of the death of, the American civic nationalism or civic faith in the system. The idea that, the rules are generally followed. These institutions, while may be imperfect, are fundamentally functional. They serve their purpose. We have laws, we have elections and these things, and this simply isn't the case anymore. And so those who are, again, MAGA country, if you will, those on the right have to start thinking a little differently how they're going to deal with this, think a little creatively, because these institutions are thoroughly corrupt at this point.
And that's well said. We're in a different environment, and it's use the expression hardball. There just isn't any legal process that can be trusted, or political process that can be trusted. So, we're back to Mao's dictum of power comes out of the barrel of a gun.
Yeah, or who doing what to whom or something. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is that no advocation of violence here, mind you. I'm just saying that you will have the power for your sovereignty that you're able to somehow defend. I don't know physically how.
Well, you can have the most eloquent constitution on paper, all the right words in all the right places, and you can point to it and say, this is what the law says. But if the people entrusted to enforce the law and follow the constitution are corrupt, then you don't have anything.
Yeah. Now, on the big picture, I think that Trump is theatrical. I think he's a dramatic persona. He is the pompous white male. He's there, to create hatred on the left, and more than he is to lead, the right in any way. So what happens to him in this case, I'm not too concerned about. I was actually more excited about RFK Jr.'s announcement that he was intending to run. I think that he's someone who at least his talking points have the power to be able to get at that fraction of people in the middle of America's political spectrum whose minds can be shifted. There are still a few of those. Mm-hmm. I think his understanding of how the neocons have wasted America's greatness, and of course of the vaccine and the mandates. Mm-hmm. I think that just his bringing those issues about and the way he's able to talk about them, I've seen him in a couple of debates, exchanges, and believe me, the left has no one who could have a chance against him. You sent a tweet that he had issued. Would you mind reading it? Do you have it available? Because I was really, I thought, wow, this is like the best tweet from a potential real presidential candidate I've ever heard. I was just astonished at it.
Yes, he tweeted, the collapse of U.S. influence over Saudi Arabia and the kingdom's new alliance with China and Iran are painful emblems of the abject failure of the neocon strategy of maintaining U.S. global hegemony with aggressive projections of military power. China has displaced the American empire by deftly projecting instead economic power over the past decade. Our country has spent trillions bombing roads, ports, bridges, and airports. China has spent the equivalent building the same across the developing world. The Ukraine war is the final collapse of the neocon's short-lived American century. The neocon project in Iraq and Ukraine have cost $8.1 trillion, hollowed out our middle class, made a laughingstock of the U.S. military power and moral authority, pushed China and Russia into an invincible alliance, destroyed the dollar as the global currency, cost millions of lives, and done nothing to advance democracy or in friendship of influence. I'm sorry, friendships or influence. So yes, so that's a good summation of the current crisis and the misgovernance that we've suffered over the, you know, the past, 3 years, but that's probably going back since 30 years.
So. So I am hoping that there'll be some real emotion with the revelations. First of the Ukrainian catastrophe. Mm-hmm. I don't think this can get covered up very much longer. I think when the U.S. public realizes that they've been lied to about it, because there won't be any way really to hide that fact. They've been telling them right up to today that Ukraine is winning. We're grinding the Russian down, but in fact, the Ukrainian country is being evaporated. So when that happens, and you can see that Kennedy was calling him on that fact in the tweet. And then also, that will probably shortly be followed by certainly a diminution of America's position as the world's reserve.
Well, has the ADL condemned Robert Kennedy's tweet as anti-Semitic yet?
Well, he's dog whistling with his neocon. So
yes, neocon, yes, yeah.
I'm sure they're going to be, you know, clanging the pots and pans here pretty quick. But I just think that, you know, Kennedy, I really think he can handle all of that. He's pretty tough. He has the goodwill that, you know, that he kind of has left over from his assassinated family members, you know, so the Kennedy name is worth something. And he just comes across as someone who is real and believable. And I just don't think they can tar him with the anti-Semitic brush or any of that stuff.
They're trying to do it, to call him an anti-vaxxer or whatever that means.
They lost that issue. I really honestly believe that at one point that was going to be a problem. But now I think that if anything, a majority of the public would actually respect him for that. And let me tell you something, there won't be a single person on the left that will try to debate that issue with him. He would roll over them like a steamroller. I mean, the typical politicians don't know anything about the science of vaccines anyway, but Kennedy does. And so, no, he. I don't think that's an issue they're going to be challenging on. But this is the point. It's, you know, Tim, it's like the diminishing return situation that I've always been talking about. What can they say at this point? I mean, what issues do they have? I mean, the issue they have is transgender rights. I mean, this would be...
Well, yeah, that's one interesting thing about RFK Jr. is obviously he has the family name, the legacy of the Kennedys, the very 20th century, here around the 21st century, how he comes across. He's completely unpretentious, and he has a damaged larynx from disease, which gives his voice sort of a tortured, passionate sound to it. Now, obviously, after 3 years of listening to Joe Biden speak, American people could probably suffer listening to Kennedy's damaged voice. But if it comes across as sincere, and he's a serious, I've read his work, he's a very good writer, and he doesn't come across as a politician. He's an activist. He kind of made his bones with environmental law. That was his activism. But from what I understand, it's not like his environmental activism isn't like Greta Thunberg. He's concerned about, you know, pollution and toxicity. And that this kind of led him into the vaccine issue, because he was noticing that a similar problem with vaccines, particularly autism. He's called out the explosion in autism. And also, I read a lot of his book on Anthony Fauci. And he called out the explosion in chronic illnesses, and he related back to, again, to the big pharma, the medical industrial complex. And he's aware of just how corrupt that is, these supposed regulatory agencies which have become captured by these big pharmaceutical firms, companies. And so that he has that wisdom, I think, and that he can bring to these issues. Now, he's calling out the military industrial complex, the American empire. And of course, his uncle did that. He threatened to break CIA into 1,000 pieces and throw, cast it to the wind. Of course, it didn't turn out well for John F. Kennedy when he did that. I don't know at this point if, considering the state of the federal government, what it represents, the powers it represents, that electing a president, but nevertheless, can solve that problem. It is interesting that we on the cultural issues. Where, of course, with the Dobbs decision, the abortion issue has been relegated to this, a return to the states. So that's kind of off. It's not so much a presidential issue anymore right now. So which could open up a lot more Catholics to vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., whereas otherwise, if he had to take a pro-abortion stance, they wouldn't vote for him. At least a lot of them wouldn't. Some of these other cartridges, like these tranny issues, which I'd have to think that Robert F. Kennedy probably just as being weird, like most people, that's probably being handled more effectively at the states, although the Biden administration is doing all it can to promote that nonsense. Effectively, that issue is handled at the state level, particularly the school board level. At least that's where you can deal with it effectively. And it is being dealt with effectively in several states now, which is why they're in such a panic. So it is interesting. Again, he brings to a certain, again, unpretentiousness and seriousness to the presidential race. One thing that, of course, we don't get with Donald Trump or Joe Biden.
Right. Yeah.
You know, at least rhetorically. I mean, it's,
Yeah, I mean, the optics are absolutely fantastic.
One thing that's interesting is, I don't know, when his uncle ran and his father ran 68, going into the 60s, you had sort of this optimistic liberal outlook on things. The federal government was flush with money, the budgets were balanced. And you had the new frontier, this idea that with the federal government, you could do anything. You could win World War II, put a man on the moon, and these things. And that optimism is now gone. Of course, the party that elected John F. Kennedy in 1960 and almost elected Robert F. Kennedy, well, could have elected Robert, although it was, by 68, it was much more tumultuous, the times, because of the Vietnam War and everything. The Cultural Revolution was on its way, but was well underway. But is the politics of the Democratic Party has changed. Obviously, in 72, it was taken over by McGovernites and became sort of radicalized. The party of amnesty, acid and abortion, as Richard Nixon called it. And then in 92, of course, you had the new Democrats, right? And neoliberalism took over. So the party has gone through so many changes, as did the Republican Party. But ideologically now, it's made up of, it's kind of this patchwork of special interest, sexual minorities or ethnic minorities. The liberalism of the 1960s simply can't sell because one of the things, the demographics of the nation have changed so much. And this speaks to this issue of talking about the decline of civic nationalism in the country has proceeded along with sort of the demographic changes that have been imposed upon the country, meaning that the group that actually believes in these things have been dwindling. So the idea of America is dissolving right in front of our eyes. As the nation's dissolved by deliberate policies, particularly weaponized migration and the sort of the attack on ethnic white America or heritage America, and so these appeals that you could have in the 60s, however flawed, simply won't sell anymore because politics is there's so much strife and division in politics, which has been intentionally created. So
for sure, I just think that everything would be timing. There are, continuing revelations concerning vaccine damage. Mm-hmm. And the one poll indicated, and this was among Democrats, that as many of them knew someone who they thought had died of the vaccine as had been saved by the vaccine. So some of the polls are really showing, that's an issue that might actually cut, and create some new voting behavior. And you couple that with the Ukraine debacle really gets exposed at a certain point. If both of those issues just come to light and are catching the imagination of the public, I think this would really give him a chance to win, because he would be the only candidate who could really, you know, ride those issues to you know, like a voting success. So, you know, who knows?
Well, he's a candidate that's talking about real issues.
Well, yeah, and he talks about it in a real way. So, but to see,
wait, here's another tweet. Let me share this other tweet that he sent out. Find this interesting. The Fed just announced that we'll introduce the FedNow Central Bank Digital Currency, CBDC, in July. CBDCs grease the slippery slope to financial slavery and political tyranny. While cash transactions are anonymous, a CBDC will allow the government to surveil all our private financial affairs. The central bank will have the power to enforce dollar limits on all our transactions, restricting where you can send money, where you can spend it, and when your money expires. A CBDC tied to the digital ID and social credit score will allow the government to freeze your assets or limit your spending to approved vendors if you fail to comply with arbitrary diktats, i.e. vaccine mandates. The Fed will initially limit its CBDC to interbank transactions, but we should not be blind to the obvious danger that this is the first step in banning and seizing Bitcoin, as the Treasury did with gold 90 years ago today, 1933. Watch as governments, which never let a good crisis go to waste, use COVID-19 and the banking crisis to usher in a new wave of CBDCs as a safe haven from a germ-laden paper currency or a protection against bank runs.
Right. And boy, is he correct on that. If they're able to get, you know, central bank digital currency to become, you know, the only fungible element in the land, we are sunk. I mean, that is an absolute technological slave state. So it has to be resisted literally by all means necessary. And of course, again, not a single, well, I guess Ron Paul mentioned it, but other than that, other than him, I mean, this is the first person in the political spectrum to actually bring up the issue. And you can see by, you know, his writing that he really understands the issue. It's not that hard, but I have heard politicians, you know, talk about this, and they don't really understand the details of why it's so threatening. Well, anyway, Kennedy gets it. And so if he runs, and it looks like he might, he also, I think, will have a bully pulpit. You know, I think that the media will have a hard time ignoring, you know, his statements. And just by bringing up these issues and talking about them, I mean, he could just turn the tremendous amount of the country, you know, to a different political position, because no one's talking about any of these issues. And these are the real issues, the dangerous issues, the stuff that, and so if at a time when you start having real erosion of the dollar's reserve currency status, if the public is starting to become aware of how destructive that fact is going to be to their lifestyles, and Kennedy is the one person who understands the issue and can talk about it and has been talking about it, well, you never know, Tim. You never know. But anyway, I mean, I just think from the optics, he's terrific, and I'm hoping that you know, he does run.
Yeah, we'll see. Again, America's the United States is dissolving, you know, between our beneath our feet. Yeah. And we saw that in the latest Wall Street Journal poll, where the amount of people who are patriotic are less than 30% or something, consider themselves patriotic, whereas it was over 70% just 20 years ago or late 90s. Yeah, it was. Meanwhile, share Americans who valued involvement in their community is very important fell to 27%, down from 62% in 2019. That's scarcely 3 years. By contrast, the only value that has grown in worth to Americans is money, with 43% calling it very important. In 1998, 70% of Americans said patriotism was very important to them. It has fallen to 38% today. The poll also found that 3% of Americans under age of 30 say patriotism was very important, compared to 59% of seniors. So basically, it's a generational thing. Well, like I said, the nation is, they've sort of dissolved the nation. And this reflects these things like in the corruption of the political system, the corruption of the judicial system, the social fabric has been shredded. Society's collapsing. So you still have these institutions with nothing really, no social support for it anymore. And we see that in the corruption, the fact that elite don't care even well, the optics anymore. How with that type of situation, these are values which no society can exist without. If it doesn't believe in these things, then society simply is eroding. How do you turn that around? I don't know. At least I don't know how you do it at a national level. The sort of this, they've indoctrinated in sort of this pessimism. They've declared America evil, its heritage wrong or something, white people all evil. Of course, that's the core population of the country, and wonder why they have a problem recruiting people for the armed services. Yeah. They've done that to the country. At the same time, again, this we mentioned how this indictment of Trump was sort of symbolized the end of that America, and something new is obviously emerging or changing. What emerges from the rubble? Who's to know? But the indictment itself was, in many ways a big distraction, right? Because during the indictment, I think it was announced that there was a list of countries they were moving away from the U.S. dollar, the de-dollarization of the global economy. I think Russia, China, Iran, Brazil, Argentina, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and India announced they're no longer using dollars in their intertransactions. So the dollar crisis is rapidly unfolding, because this is a consequence of the war in the Ukraine, the sanctions, obviously the inflation, that all the money printing during the COVID emergency. But something is definitely changing, and I don't think it'll be overnight, because there's so many dollars changing overnight. I don't think it's possible, but nevertheless, it does appear that the petrodollar and the greenback as a world of reserve currency, the sun is setting. The sun is setting on it, at least as a reserve currency.
Did you catch Rubio's comment? I thought it was probably one of the most ironic and hilarious blunders that I've seen in a while. He was on.
Did he call it a weapon or something?
Oh, no. What he said was that he was furious, and he said, just today, I'm quoting, he said, just today, Brazil, the largest country in the Western Hemisphere, cut a trade deal with China. They're going to, from now on, do trade in their own currencies, right around the dollar. They're creating a secondary economy in the world, totally independent of the United States. We won't be able to talk about sanctions in 5 years, because there'll be so many countries transacting in currencies other than the dollar, we won't have the ability to sanction them.
That's the point.
exactly. He literally said that with a straight face, as though this would, create some concern on the part of the citizens. I mean, he just gave away the fact that the whole point of the petrodollar is to create a kind of, economic enslavement of the planet, by forcing them to only trade in our currency. So the fact that all of these deals now are getting made one after another, it seems like every day you read about one, so two countries are deciding they're not going to trade the dollar anymore. Now, the reserve currency has two sort of functions. One is trading. It's used to settle trades. And the other, it's a reserve. It's where nations store wealth, supposedly. Mm-hmm. Now, in the second sense, that will, as you say, take quite a while to work through, because there are, $30 trillion in existence that represent the debt of our nation, but also the wealth of those who happen to be holding these things. And so that could take a while to work through, even if the dollar is debasing and they're worth less. But on the other side, as a means of settling trade, which is in some ways almost more powerful than the reserve feature, because you need to buy stuff. The reserve currencies just sit in the banks or as an electronic event. They're just part of the pixelated reality. They don't really mean anything. But if you want food or oil, and the person who has it says, I don't really need, I got plenty of dollars. Give me some of those yuan. And you don't have any. Now you can see how fast things could flip, because it's really the trading aspect, the settlement of trade, that will determine when the sun is set on the petrodollar. And I think that could happen really quick. It kind of depends on the extent that the West needs to go to these other countries for stuff. I mean, if you think about it, you buy your widgets from China, energy from Russia, you get a lot of food from Brazil. If they aren't taking the dollar anymore, well, then the dollar will start to lose value dramatically. And now the people who are holding it, now you get into the reserve stature, well, they could just panic and start trying to figure out what the heck, we've got to find some other way to store our wealth. It's interesting, but there's a sort of kind of microcosm of the sovereigns with their enormous amount of U.S. treasuries in our banking system. I mean, if you look at like Bank America or Schwab or Goldman or any of these banks, they all bought enormous quantities of treasuries. Mm-hmm. During the low interest rate zone, they could, it was just found money. They could buy the stuff with, at one price that they could, they were eventually paying less than the face value of the note for their money. So it was just found money. And the government, of course, is always anxious to sell its debt to whoever will buy it. So they were happy to have that phenomenon take place. But now they're holding them. So now you're talking about the banking crisis in the United States. Well, what that really is, it's the decline in value of all of the these treasuries that the central banks own, Schwab, Bank of America, JP. And those losses are larger than in most cases than the net capital value of the entity. In other words, like Bank of America is sitting on more losses than the stock valuation of the company. And so they are really enormous. And obviously the government can, create policy to get through that. There's different maneuvers you can do, but all of them involve further erosion of the sort of the strength of the dollar, because no matter how you cut it, you're going to have to invent money somewhere in order to patch all this stuff up. So anyway, the fact that all of these countries are flipping at one time, this is, I think, indicative of the fact that the word is out that, that the dollar is, eventually, very shortly, will not be the only thing you can trade in. And so
you're probably going to like a SDRs or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we are in really interesting times, because the big one would be if Saudi says it's going to accept yuan for its oil. That would really, you start to see the underpinnings, the faith, because that's really what it amounts to. The dollar is a religion. It's not anything else. It's just a religion. But if you started to see, the largest trading component, like the oil, the crude from Saudi Arabia, trading thing other than the dollar, holy cow, this would be kind of the where when America would really that when the public would really experience the reality of their accepting of this criminal political class,
because, well, that's what it is. I mean, it could be that Ukraine could be like our Suez moment, right, when the British pound sterling lost its reserve status against the dollar finally in the 1957, and that just exposed a weakness, of the British Empire or the Commonwealth as it was then. And so then they became a second rate power wasn't overnight, because basically the British power had been squandered for the past 40 years, with two world wars. But the big thing is the Saudis, because this whole deal with the Saudis with the petrodollar is that we'll prop you up on your throne there, and you can consider, you know, continue to live it up as we make sure no one rebels against you, and you make sure you sell oil in dollars. And of course, what this does is this creates a huge pool of credit for the U.S. government, where they can pay for big military operations and pork barrel spending and a lot of these. Yes,
there's another little bonbon that caught me. I'm sorry, I didn't want to overlook, because you just set me up perfectly there. I don't know. Do you know who Elbridge Colby is? Probably don't. He's just a Pentagon insider, kind of a typical swap monster. You know, he's like he just spouts neocon platitudes all day long. Well, anyway, he sent out a tweet. he mentions his enormous concern. He's just terrified of it. He goes, would the U.S. even be able to finance a war with China if the dollar was no longer the world reserve currency? I mean, straight face. I mean, can you believe this?
God forbid.
It's insane. I know. This is being brought out to the American public of why we should be fighting to make sure that our currency stays. Yeah, no, he actually tweeted that, and with a straight face. And so this is, you know, that's a good indication of the, I don't know, what intellectual and spiritual character.
We have to go to war with China to prevent it from dumping our treasuries overnight.
Right, right. So anyway,
Well, what it's done, though, is it's created what's called exorbitant privilege, meaning everyone talked about this improved Americans' living standards, because we can get imports relatively cheap. At the same, this is what the deal was struck, not only with the Saudis, with the petrodollar, but with all around the world, particularly with Europe, Germany, and Japan, is that they would export to the United States and accept our dollars, and then they have to buy our treasuries, which would enable the federal government to run these massive deficits and keep the pork barrel spending going and all the other mischief and chicanery that goes along in Washington, D.C. But what it did do also is it led to the deindustrialization of the United States and all the problems that created. One other thing is we no longer have an arsenal democracy, as this Ukraine war is exposed, meaning we have to rely so much on other countries for parts, spare parts, and other things, that it's hollowed out the U.S. economy. It's created what they call the fire economy. It's finance, insurance, and real estate, and financialized the economy, which really doesn't produce anything of value other than sort of the managing of debt, you know, with U.S. treasuries and then credit default swaps and all this financial swindles that the U.S. economy is based on. And we see it with the banking system. But it's destroyed manufacturing in the economy. It's hurt agriculture. It's awash the country and the world in debt, unpayable debt, to the point where it's simply an abstraction for most people, the amount of debt in the world, and all types of debt obligations and these things that can never be paid back. Of course, the idea behind that is you never pay it back; you just keep paying the interest on it. So everyone's financially enslaved. That's what the dollar is. The dollar is debt based. No reason for that. We could have a fiat currency issued directly by the Treasury, but we've created this banking system that does this, and so every dollar that's brought into circulation is debt, and which compounds year in, year out. So that's why we see these massive debts, and we see these periodic panics, financial collapses, and bailouts that are necessary. All that's a function of user debt system that we live under, that which sort of has been normalized. But one thing also that's done, it's done culturally to the American people. One thing is it's destroyed manufacturing and producing, which is real work. And so, which has laid waste to the human capital, our labor markets. The American people themselves are, while they're engaged in sort of glorified bureaucratic work, you know, creating spreadsheets and pushing paper, they're not really creating anything, not doing anything. I've read something that even the quality of the recruits have suffered for, like, the armed services, because so many young people are no longer engaged in any physical activity, working. They're just doing paper pushing jobs. They're not doing anything, and so now there's been a fundamental decline in the quality and the health of people. A lot of that is a function of the economic system, the macroeconomic incentives or rules that have been created under the petrodollar system. One thing is also it's created a huge debt and inflation, which has destroyed the ability for a single paycheck to raise a family. So now you have the destruction of the nuclear family. This coincides with the cultural push towards feminism and homosexuality and transgenderism. These things is all part of the same process, this corruption of society, the debasement of currency leads to the debasement of society itself. The idea in order to chase the buck, to keep ahead, one step ahead, or don't get too far behind inflation, you constantly have to be on the move and look for the better paying job. This leads to sort of a cosmopolitan or a rootless society, which can be easily be exploited and manipulated by Madison Avenue and the social engineers that we see today. The effects, so the transgenderism we're seeing today is sort of a consequence of this stuff, the corruption of the destruction of community and family, and the loss of community that afflicts the United States today, the West, which can easily be molded and manipulated. And we're seeing that day in this sort of this the rise of these janissaries of the state, particularly the youth, the Antifa, which I think as much as 20% of Antifa identify as non-binary gender. That's how confused they are. And so the cultural effect of the corruption of the petrodollar system and the dollar reserve currency, it's destroyed the real economy. Basically, for lack of production, we've been able to pursue a standard of living far beyond our means through debt. Of course, that's not really wealth. That's just debt. And now the bills come due. And
if you want to do the single thing which will reduce evil in our world, it would be to end the purchasing power of the dollar. Because since the government is evil, it uses the purchasing power for, well, world hegemony, right? Mm-hmm. It tries to dominate the world in an evil way. I mean, the Ukraine war, I think, is a good expose of that. But then moreover, it's also destroying the citizens of the U.S. because mm-hmm. without the capacity for the fake money, you couldn't have a city like Chicago. I mean, he was worried about, well, how could you finance a war with China, if you don't have a reserve currency status? Well, how could Chicago finance its welfare system mm-hmm. if it had actually, link into a real economic situation? You'd have to bring these areas back into the kind of cultural structure that existed before. You started to have government have all the power.
Look at Detroit when it was engaged in manufacturing, as opposed to Detroit under the finance economy.
So this is the thing, is that, and so the cities have been destroyed because of the fake money. It's a little hard to see, but that's really what enabled all of these the different sovereigns to develop such extraordinary debt.
Well, suburbia was financed with a 30-year mortgage, which is an extension of federal credit, which is based on sort of the dollar as the reserve status. And now,
But the only problem is, and I just do want to mention that to go through that process would just be a very difficult time, because yes, you would have starvation and violence, complete breakdown of civilization, which I guess has already occurred in a lot of these areas. But the fact is, at the other side, if anyone made it out, you would have the opportunity to set up an actual human.
Well, how do you? I mean, you could unwind it. A good example: stop the Ukraine war.
Of course.
That would take a lot of pressure. Right now, a lot of the shortages that we're seeing, supply chain problems and these things are a direct result of that war, which might be why the war is being waged in the first place. Like I said, the suggestion is this a collapse of the petrodollar system and the greenback as a reserve currency, is it because of incompetence, chutzpah, going too far, a combination there? And because how you get to the central bank digital currency is through a monetary crisis and an economic crisis.
Exactly.
And all these things are seen to be geared towards creating an economic crisis, because you're right, destroying the real physical economy. While you're bombing, for Pete's sake, they bombed They blew up a major pipeline.
Right. So it's gangsterism at a very high level. But moreover, as you point out, it sure feels like it's all structured. It sure feels like we're heading to someplace deliberately, being taken to someplace, and that place is going to be enslavement. That place is going to have central bank digital currency and vaccine mandates and you know, absolutely fake elections, and you're just going to be stuck. So this is what they're trying to achieve here, and they're financing it with their fake petrodollar. Mm-hmm. So, you know, different things are occurring, and let's hope that the information revolution accelerates. Because, you know, as you go through the process that they have structured, you know, to enslave us, it does have the, you know, kind of the capacity of waking people up. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, when, if for example, there's a real decline in the dollar purchasing value for goods, you know, that comes out of the Ukraine war. The Ukraine war is exposed at some point, let's hope, you know, as being just a Holodomor 2.0 genocide. Well, the public can take that information and have some zealotry about making political changes. So this is what I hope, is that as they start bringing about the changes, you know, of the enslaved, that will entail the enslavement, people will notice and have some energy to get back into the political system and fight. I mean, when you sent me that tweet from Bobby Kennedy, and I replied, you know, I'm not sure I trust this guy, because, you know, I just don't trust any political class individual. But I said, I'm sure as hell going to work hard to get him elected.
Yeah.
You know, because someone who brings up these issues and talks about them this way, man, what a breath of fresh air to the presidential races. I mean, just, you know, banning Hillary and Trump, you know, to some kind of intellectual Siberia so they can't talk anymore would just be wonderful. So just having him out there is a really wonderful thing. And if the timing is all correct, then we could get into a situation where real change is possible.
Well, if he does like win the California primary, and which seals his nomination for the Democrat National at the Democrat National Convention, I hope he has the presence of mind to not to be led through a kitchen.
Well, let me just, my advice to him would be to keep the bubble up on the convertible, because that didn't work for his uncle. And I really think that, I mean, he would just be an obvious target. It's hard to imagine they would permit someone
like that. Well, like what his, I mean, obviously if he's actually wanting to care what he's saying, yes, he's opposing sort of this colossal globalist, you know, monstrous force. Again, he talks about neocons.
Yeah, dog whistling. And also, yeah. I mean, I think he would bring up the idea that, you know, when people try to push global homo down your throats, that, well, you know, we really want to have a discussion in terms of toxicity. And Kennedy would be really knowledgeable about it.
Well, I think Tucker Carlson was correct when he was talking about Occupy Wall Street. It was just then that the banks started funding all this sexual weirdo stuff, right? Because, you know, people talk about Jamie Dimon and calling out the banks, and all of a sudden they start, hey, guess what? We're all gay. Yeah. Funny how that works, the gay disco. Yeah. So everyone, you know, so now it's full force now. I mean, it's kind of funny, here we are more than a week, we're coming up on almost 2 weeks from that massacre in Nashville, and the Biden administration is doubling down on the trans stuff, so is, you know, corporate media, Bud Light and all that stuff is being promoted. Doesn't stop them, actually, double down on this nonsense. They're still trying to use Title IX to force, you know, transgendered men into women's sports, still interpreting that law, the Title IX law, which is part of the 1972 amendment to the Civil Rights Act or something.
Yeah.
And they're saying somehow, because you're not supposed to discriminate based on sex, to somehow sports programs that are exclusively for men and for women are discriminating. Well, they're sports programs, women's sports programs. Now they're saying is someone identifies as a sex, as the opposite sex or another sex, that they have to recognize that. Well, obviously, that's not the intent of that law, meaning it discriminates sex discrimination, these things, and idea of providing equal opportunity, meaning parallel programs or similar programs for both sexes. But they're so hell bent on, again, destroying, destroying the idea of male female that the Biden administration is doubling down on. This is some bureaucrat in the Department of Education pushing this title.
You know, they have to work quick. I think the independent media, you know, you can just see in the stats that more and more people are suspicious of the government and of the possibility of a secret society. I mean, these things are just, you know, steadily, it's slow, but there is. And if you go back to, say, before 9/11, you can see there's just been a dramatic increase. So they have to go reasonably quick here in order to set up their little slave state, slave world. And I think the vaccine and the lockdowns were, ham-handed. I think that they weren't really timed properly. And I think that they did spin out quite a bit of resentment and skepticism. And the transgender meme is obviously a way to deal with the toxic attack that they have.
Well, it's obviously deranged. Did you see Riley Gaines, that swimmer?
Yeah.
Who was protesting the fact that guy was able to pretend to be a woman. Yeah. And she was just giving a speech, was it out in San Francisco? And she was attacked by a mob.
Yeah.
And they, some guy in a dress punched her, assaulted her several times.
Yeah.
This
is where we are. And yeah. They have to do this because, obviously with the transgender agenda, the only way you can get that into the American sort of life is through force. I mean, that can't possibly occur just by people becoming aware of the historical importance of the transgender to America.
Well, the fact that you've said last year that's so top down is obviously top down.
Yeah.
Stuff could not be come about out of nowhere without corporate backing, governmental backing. You know, its effect is so bizarre that it can only be imposed top down because no one's going to organically embrace this and see it as normal. It's obviously deranged. It's, the idea that trans women are women, no, they're not. That's why they're trans, first of all, but they're not, that doesn't make it happen, but they're trying to make everyone accept this. And then implying that if you oppose this, that you may be subject to violence now, which is right. But again, that has the full backing of corporate America, the banking system and global corp and these things.
It's an opportunity because it exposes them. Everyone who is creating this agenda can now be identified by the public as being part basically of a secret society.
Well, I can paraphrase Victor Hugo. I think it's Victor Hugo. Nothing is more powerful than a deranged or bad idea that has the full backing of the Jewish establishment.
And the government, the media, the movie stars are all having sex change children, Madonna, Cher. I mean, this is just, kind of par for the course for the cultural influencers. If it was just one it might not make the public raise an eyebrow, but when they all do it, when and the government is backing them up and when it just becomes too ham-handed at a certain point. And the public can see it. They are, in my opinion, they are exposed at this point.
They think children should be able to decide to mutilate themselves. They call it gender-affirming care or sex. You can't change your sex. That's another language they use. Trans people don't exist. It's just a word they apply to someone who's suffering from a delusion, who wants to mutilate him or herself. Nevertheless, they use these words, but it's saying if a child didn't do this to himself or herself, then a child can also consent to sexual activity, right?
Well, of course.
So this is a step towards legalizing pedophilia.
Of course it is. Once they break kind of the distinction between male and female, then the distinction between old and young is axiomatic. It's gone. Mm-hmm. You know, they will have the sexual perversion world that they've always wanted to have.
But it's a complete break from reality.
Well, for the people,
you cannot engage. You really can't live in a community with people like this or engage in a political union with people like this. They have to be expelled or dealt with in one way or another because they're deranged. The fact is, the powers that be, the oligarchs that we've talked about of a certain ethnicity group, will want this because that's how you get control over society. Because then if you break reality, then you're in a position to recreate reality in the way you think is congenial to your interests, which is what they how they view things.
Yep. Know?
You know, if there is a reality, 2 + 2 = 4, and there's a reality, and there's right and wrong, you can look at an oligarch and say, you can't do that. That's wrong. You know, we're both subject to the same law, moral law here. You can't do that. They don't like that. You know.
No.
So, but anyway, all is not lost.
No, it's not. Well, Tim, great talking to you, brother, and we'll get them next week.
Okay, Joe, have a happy Easter.
You too. Have a happy Easter, Tim. Bye-bye.
Take care. Good night. Bye-bye.